And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
And welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren.
I'm Gino.
And I'm Kevin.
And we want to welcome you to our fourth episode. It happens to be Wednesday, September 14th. And we can't wait to talk to you about the world of sports today. Where we're going to start off today is baseball, because we're coming down to the wire. I know, Kev, you had a lot of thoughts about a lot of things with baseball. We're going to let you kick it off for us.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, we've got watching the Mets game right now, losing 6-2 to the Cubs. About to get swept. Just awful, awful, awful. They had the Saturday and Sunday were good. Good offense. Scored a lot of runs, beat up on the Marlins. You thought they were finally turning the corner, going to just start dominating this week. And they came out flat these three games against the Cubs. Luckily, the Giants are helping them out by beating the Braves 2 out of 3. And Seattle took 2 out of 3 from the Braves this weekend. What do you think, guys? Can the Mets hold on?
I think they're going to. it's a really interesting weekend of baseball. I mean, you know, with the Braves and the Mets, Braves won game one of the series, and you're saying, oh, my God, they're going to win 2 out of 3 in Seattle. But Seattle came back, bounced back with 2 nice wins. The Mets, you know, it's going to come down to the health of the starting pitchers. If they can stay healthy, they'll be okay, I think. G, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the Mets are going to hold on. I think it's going to be nip and tuck for the next 2 weeks, though. I think anyone that's a Mets fan is going to be on the edge of their seat wondering if they hold on to that coveted division title, because I do not think any of these teams like the Mets want to be in that wild card game. So
it brings me up to a good point there that I just found out this week. Maybe other people know or are aware of it. Seeding for the playoffs. As we know, the three division winners are 1, 2, 3. The three wild cards are 4, 5, and 6. We know the top two get byes. 3 plays 6, 4 plays 5. Next round, regardless of records, the winner, the top seed plays 4-5, and the 2 seed plays 3-6. So whoever finishes second between Mets and Braves, assuming they survive their best of three wild card round, get to play the Dodgers. What do you think? Is that fair, or should they reseed by record?
I always believe in reseeding. I just think it should always be – it works well in the NFL. I just think reseeding is one of those type of things that you're the 1 seed. Actually, this is not unfair for the Mets or the Braves. This is unfair for the Dodgers.
100%.
The Mets or the Braves will be happy to get to that level and play the Dodgers. The Dodgers go out, and they're at 100 wins basically already in mid-September, just about. And they now get the reward of having a bye and having to probably play the Braves or the Mets. Not really fair, but at the same point in time, I don't love the fact that baseball expanded the playoffs this much. But, you know, if they did, I think it should be fair to the top seed. G, what do you think?
I just want to make sure we clarify what we're talking about. The Dodgers would be the 1 seed.
Yes.
And then either the Braves or the Mets would be the 2 seed. So they would get the 3-6 winner.
Correct.
So it would not – I don't think it would be Atlanta and the Mets.
It would be, because one of the one that would win is going to be the 4 seed, G.
The wild
one that
card.
Doesn't win the 2 gets the 4. The 3 is going to be the Cardinals. It's regardless. The Cardinals are the 3. So, you know, I get what you're saying, but somehow, some way, it looks like the Phillies, who are the only team that are playing relatively well in that wild card race, are going to play the Braves or the Mets in a very heated rivalry 3-game set. So after you exhaust some of that, you get to play the Dodgers.
And likewise, from the Dodgers' perspective, if the Braves or Mets win that wild card round, here are the Dodgers in round 2 facing a 100-win team. Yeah. When you've got teams that are the Cardinals or any other team are worse.
I mean, the funny thing is, in the American League, it's not nearly as heated. You know, I mean, the Astros are going to most likely play Blue Jays or Rays or somebody in that range, maybe Seattle. But it doesn't matter. All three of those teams are about the same. The Mets and the Braves are so far head over heels over Phillies and Padres and Brewers, who's still in it as well, only two games out, it makes it like, wow, you got to play the 100-win team in the second round after you bye. But you do have to get the rest of your pitchers. You do get to set your rotation a little bit better than the other team. But wow, it's still a punishment. And if a six seed, so say Milwaukee gets the six, and they beat St. Louis. The Mets, say they hold on. The Mets will get the Brewers, and the Dodgers most likely get the Phillies or the Braves. And it's just like, wow, the Mets have the easiest second round. It'd be pretty cool. I mean, you know, but it's not right.
it's just awful. I like reseeding it.
I do too, man. I do too.
Then Major League Baseball this week sent out some new rules or approved some new rules for next year, including banning the shift. I know they want to try to get offense in there, but when you're making millions of dollars and they put a shift on you, figure out how to hit the ball the other way. String together some hits. To me, I can equate this. NFL decides we don't have enough offense down at the goal line. Defense, you have to play your base 4-3 or 3-4. You can't play a goal line defense. Am I wrong?
Well, I think you're a little exaggerated because I think they've already done it in football by not allowing defensive backs to really cover wide receivers. They've already said, listen, this is Tecmo Bowl. And you can just go up and down the field. As long as nobody's Bo Jackson, you can keep playing Tecmo Bowl and score every single time you get the damn ball. But I do get your point. I mean, listen, the worst thing in the world is when your team is struggling at the plate and you need base runners and they're playing this monster shift and you see this huge hole on the left side and your number seven hitter, who they're still playing a shift on, still can't figure out a way to go the other way as he tries to hit a ground ball off a – or for a pitch away and he hits a ground to the second, or actually the third baseman makes the play because he's playing over there. It's the most frustrating thing as a fan to watch. I don't know why batters don't know how to use the whole field anymore.
I actually like the rule change.
You're wrong.
I like it, and I like it because it's going to give us a little bit more offense that is not a home run. We are getting to the point where this home run strikeout are the only two options, and maybe this helps change that.
To me, avoid the home run strikeout. If they play the shift, bunt. Get my base, bunt.
You say that, but on the other hand, my argument to you would be these guys haven't bunted in 15 years. They don't bunt in the minors. They don't bunt in college. And now all of a sudden you want Giancarlo Stanton to go up there and drop a bunt. It's just not going to happen.
I just want him to hit a ground ball to second base. That's all I want. Hit a ground to the second, you bump.
It's not the way the game is played. And I know you're not in favor of it, but I actually like the fact that they're going to ban the shift.
Listen, it's a good point. Listen, it's a good point, and it makes it more exciting. But I don't think you're going to see less strikeouts and less home run attempts with this. I think you're going to see more of it. I think that you're just going to see more base hits or hard line drives to get through. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I don't think the strikeouts diminish at all. I just think it helps offense. I think it gets base hits through the right side or the left side, depending on the shift. I just think those hard liners that look like they're going to drop, that get caught by the second baseman, are going to go away. That's all.
Maybe that's a good thing.
No, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Kev?
I understand the offense, but if you know the guy's got to hit the ball somewhere, why can't you put your fielder there?
At some point, they have to either change it or they have to do something else so that it is workable. And right now, it's just not workable. The way the game is played right now, it is causing way too much of a problem for these hitters. And they went the other way. And listen, we could say the same thing about the tack last year. It wasn't working for the pitchers. They got rid of the tack for the pitchers. You have to keep making changes. Otherwise, what's going to happen is one – or the other is going to have too big of an advantage. And right now, the advantage is too much on the defensive team. The offensive player has less and less chance. So I'm actually happy with it. I know you guys are both against it, but What else did they do, Kev?
Pitch clock.
I just wanted to make one more point, Kev. I'm sorry, before we go
ahead.
I think that there happens to be a love affair with offense. Now, all three of us have been to over hundreds of baseball games, right? Hundreds over the years.
Yes.
The best games I've ever been to have been great pitchers' duels, where great pitching and great hitting go back and forth, and it's a 2-1, 1-0, 3-2, 4-3 game. I never go back and say, oh, I remember that 11-9 game is a great game. I remember it as bad pitching. I don't remember it as exciting as I do a great pitchers' duel. The only sport that's ever done something to help offense, where I think the sport is better, is hockey, where they stop the two-line pass and let you extend out. Everything else, football, with the way they try to make it, where the defense can't play, bores the crap out of me. Baseball, I love pitchers' duels. I love going to games where two pitchers are pitching great. Maybe I'm alone on this, but that's the way I like my sports. I like defense. I like pitching. I like stealing bases. I like all the things that they don't like about baseball anymore. Those are the things I loved. That's just what I'm sorry. Maybe, I didn't mean to cut you guys off.
No, that's all right. Maybe the next rule change that Kev's going to bring up actually will help that.
Well, there's two that are almost related a little bit. One is the pitch clock. You get in there, you step on the rubber. Well, actually, from the time the pitcher gets the ball back, he's got 20 seconds to deliver the next pitch. Speed up the game. Get it going. Enough of this stepping out.
Love it, love it, love it.
Hate it.
Love it.
Tell me why you love it. I'll tell you why I hate it. Go ahead.
I do not want to see 8 minutes in between three pitches, and I do not want to see the batter stepping out every pitch to adjust his batting gloves every pitch. And this is part of why the reason that nobody at the moment likes any pitching duels, Darren. It's part of the reason, because it's a pitching duel right now takes 3 hours. And I don't want to see a pitching duel take 3 hours. I remember seeing the Mets in 87 with Gooden, and it's a pitching duel, and the game's over in 2:20, and it was a great game. But a pitching duel at 3:30, it's not working for me. I'm sorry. Kev.
Yeah, DeGrom, about a week or two ago, DeGrom involved in the pitcher's duel. They finished the game in 2 hours and 10 minutes. It was like a throwback game. I loved it. It was bang, 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 up and down, and dominant pitching.
One of the
I don't think it's going to be as easy to police as you guys. I know that they have the mount there. Everything we hate about baseball in July is what we love about it in August. The fact that it takes 45 seconds to throw that damn pitch while you're waiting for your team in a big spot. The dramatic part of baseball is the fact that we don't try to speed it up. It's the beauty of the game. I just appreciate the beauty of the game. I know what you're saying, and but you used to not have that type of stuff. You used to not have four-hour games unless the Yankees played the Red Sox, right? I mean, that was the only time. Everything else was a 2.5 to 3, and you were able to get through with it. I don't know if stepping out, stepping back in. I think my biggest problem is more stopping the freaking manager to decide what pitch is being thrown. Stop having the catcher have to look over to the side after every freaking play if he's thrown over to first base. Freaking make a decision on the mound. Why does the manager have to be involved? Just like why does the GM have to tell him who plays? All this stuff drives me crazy about baseball. This is back to what it was. It worked.
This rule solves that problem.
I don't think it does.
It does. It absolutely does, because they're not going to have enough time.
The pitcher's going to get on the rubber immediately every time.
They're going to have to.
They have to.
The pitcher has to
get the ball back. It's going to be 20 seconds.
He gets the ball back. He can walk around the mound. He has 20 seconds once he steps on the rubber, from what I understand, correct?
Nope.
When he gets the ball back.
So he's got 20 seconds from when he gets the ball back.
Yes.
Yep. So now, the pitcher and the catcher aren't on the same page. The pitcher can't step off?
Yeah, but the catcher needs to go to the mound, from what I understand. He can't just step off and stand there.
Then so we're going to have more trips to the mound, so that's going to speed up the game.
No, well, it's not going to be more trips to the mound, Kev.
How is it not more trips to the mound?
They're still limited by trips to the mound. That rule's in place right now.
Five trips to the mound for the catcher?
Yes.
For how long?
It's not so much how long. What did each team get? About 6 or 7 trips to the mound per game between catchers and coaches?
I think that's it. I think it's. I thought it was 7, but maybe it's 6. Maybe it's 6. I thought it was 7.
It might be 7. I don't remember the exact number. So
this is going to be, they're not going to be able to police this. This is going to be a mess. This is going to be a mess.
They have tried this in the minors, and it is working with great success.
Absolutely. Everything works with the Atlantic League with a bunch of 37-year-old guys that are trying to to play baseball for one more season. They also moved the mound back 2 feet. We're going to do that too?
Listen, the
I come down this line more with Darren. I don't know if I like the pitch clock. I like the idea of keeping the batter in the batter's box. I can't stand him stepping out and readjusting every pitch.
But doesn't that
no more costly apparel was like the ultimate, right? After every bat, he did 9 million freaking things with his arms, touching this, redoing
it. And it was horrible.
It was horrendous. I agree with you.
You see Darren doing the motions.
If only he can see that. I will say, though, the one thing I'll say is I don't mind rushing the hitter. I get upset about rushing the pitcher.
Kevin, doesn't this, but both of you, doesn't this do the exact same thing? It's only giving them the 20 seconds in between. So the batter has to be in the batter's box. He has to be ready in the 20 seconds. Otherwise, the pitcher could throw a pitch right down the middle and it's going to be called a strike, whether he's in the box or not. So isn't this rule accomplishing both pieces?
So the only thing I'll say is if you, different sport, they had a clock at the U.S. Open about how long it took you to serve. Nadal broke it basically every single time. They never called him on it. How much of leeway are we going to do? Is it going to be 20? Is it going to be 22? Is it going to be 23? Are they going to blow the whistle on the 20th second? I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know how you police it. You have a superstar pitcher on the mound that happens to be taking long. I don't know, man. I think it's a tough thing to police. Kev?
You've got your ace out there, 3-1 count. You've got the bases loaded, 2 outs. He's trying to bear down to get that strike two, maybe get the pitch to get the pop-up, get the strikeout. Or not with the 3-1, you're not going to get the strikeout. But get the out. 21 seconds elapses. You're going to call ball 4?
That's right. He's got 21 seconds. The same way Steve Carlton basically threw pitch after pitch and Tom Seaver threw pitch after pitch, these pitchers will learn how to do it. The same way they're learning how to pitch without tack.
Game 7. Divisional playoff. Your pitch is on the hill. He's up a run. Bases are loaded. 3-1 pitch. Having trouble. They've already used all their moves out to the mound. Everything's moved up. Everything's done. They call ball 4 because he can't get the pitch off in 20 seconds. You lose the playoffs or the World Series or a playoff series or anything, or you lose your chance at a wild card because of it. Is it fair?
He's going to say, I'm going to be ready in 21 seconds.
I get it. I'm just saying. I mean, so that's my only problem. I love the idea of policing the batter, not letting him out of the box after everything. I love the idea that the batter has 5 seconds to get out and look at the third base coach, get right back in. I love the pitcher.
Okay.
So one more rule change, right, Kev?
The other one was about step-offs and throw-overs. Per bat, you're allowed to step off or throw over twice, and that's it, to try to speed up the game. That's going to try to influence teams that once a pitcher does a second step-off or pick-off, you've got a chance to run wild.
I hate it.
Again, you're trying to force
action. I know Gino loves it, and I know I hate it.
Listen, I love
Gino baseball. Loves fantasy, but he likes the real game. And I like the real game more than fantasy.
I love baseball. I've loved baseball since I was about 7 years old. And you know what? It is right now almost impossible to watch. And hopefully with some of these rules, it'll become better to watch. It'll be a more watchable product because right now it's so slow that even I have problems watching it sometimes. And that's saying a lot. And Kev, there was one more issue. Do you want to bring that out? Last rule change up. The bigger bases.
That one I like. I like whatever. The bigger bases. It gives you a couple extra inches towards second base to steal a base. I like it, actually.
it might save, you know, for player safety, I think, you know, when you're trying to turn 2, you've got that extra couple of inches for yourself. That, I think, is the best part of it. I don't know if the 2 inches the other way is going to make that big a difference.
Well, it's going to be 4 inches. You're going to get 2 inches each way. I think it might make people run. You're a little bit closer. I'm not saying it's dramatic, but how many times is a guy thrown out by less than 4 inches? It happens. I don't know. I kind of like it.
Yep. All right, enough baseball, I think.
Yeah, just one quick point from me here as I go. Sure. Judge, 57 now. Is he getting 62?
Woo! Yes.
Woo!
Yes. I think so, too. And I know you talked about the Mets.
Interesting stat on that.
Well, I'm sorry. What was that, Jacob? Sorry.
I was going to say, interesting stat. First time since the last day of the 1928 season that a player has 20 more home runs than the next closest player.
That's crazy.
Wow.
He's 20 ahead of Schwarber. The last time it happened, Babe Ruth ended the season with 20 more home runs than I think it was Hank Greenberg back in 1928.
That's a great stat, Kev.
And I think that Babe had more home runs than a certain amount of teams that year.
That he did a few times, I think.
Yeah, that happened a few times, but I think that was one of the years he did it.
Yeah.
The Yankees got the weekend they needed. For Derek Jeter tonight, they threw out a dud. Hicks got pulled in the middle of the game for not being able to catch a fly ball. Very exciting. But they exploded on, you know, Saturday. They exploded on Sunday. They had a very good night last night. You know, they were winning 4-1 when we started the show, so I'm not sure where they are right now. But they're actually, you know, seem to have found their groove back. I never thought I'd say in my life, Gino, that I can't wait for Nessa Cortez to get back. And then the last thing I was going to point out, I mean, you touched on the Mariners winning 2 out of 3 and the Braves and the Mets that race to the finish. Orioles finally falling out of it. They stayed in as long as they could. They've kind of slipped up. The Guardians had a monster weekend, too. They swept the Twins. They pulled ahead of them, way ahead. They've kind of distanced themselves. And then the wild card that nobody wants, Padres or the Brewers. Who do you think is grabbing the last spot in the NL?
I still think Padres.
Padres also.
I think they are, too, but it's really freaking close. So it's going to be exciting to see. Any other points, Kev?
Not for me.
All right. G, what do you say we go football?
Sure. Let's talk about NFL week one. Got some good stuff going on. Bills seemed to take care of business. The Chiefs took care of business. Tampa Bay took care of business. We saw the Giants get a really good win. Minnesota with a very big win over Green Bay. And then we got some stuff that's a little wacky to start the year. Kev, you got a point?
Giants game. Darren and I texted right before the two-point conversion. We disagreed on it. I love Dable's call on that.
I was against it.
To me, you came from behind. You're playing the team that's supposed to beat you. New coach trying to establish the fact that we're going to be aggressive. We're going to go for it. We just scored the touchdown. We feel like Saquon is running the ball well. We can get this ball into the end zone. And they made the play to get the two-point conversion and get the win.
2 points on that game. Number one, I 3 points. Number one, you were right, I was wrong, because they did it and it worked. That's the key to the whole thing. Number two, what my fear was, they came all the way back, and if they end up short because Danny Dimes just isn't that good a quarterback and he drops the snap or whatever goes wrong and they lose the game by a point, it just sets a tone of like a miserable season to me. That's why I was more nervous about it. I thought they had the momentum. I thought if they just tied it up that they could win it in overtime. That was the way I felt. But you were right, because they ran it down their throat, had a magical thing. Two things that threw me off on this game. Number one, how are they sitting there talking about Bullock's kick like it's a gimme? It was like a 48-yarder. Where are we? Where everybody's like, oh, no, to the point where they take a loss on a play because they use a timeout when the clock is stopped. Then they take a loss, and it's a 48-yard field goal. You had 14 seconds trying to get another 5 yards. They're acting like it's a layup. The announcers and the coach. I was stunned by it.
I mean, they almost tried to put it on the right hash mark for them to set up the 48-yarder. He's more comfortable from the right hash mark, apparently.
They lost 2 yards on the play. I was like, and listen, I'm rooting for the Giants. I like Saquon. I was like, I was glad that they came back, but I'm not a Giant fan, but I was rooting for them. But, man, I couldn't believe how they played it. The second thing is Giants won that game because the defense kept them in it in the first half. Every time the Titans had the ball in so many different scenarios, they held them to 13. They did a great job. I was really impressed with how hard Dable had those guys playing. And if you've seen the Giants the last few years on the previous coaching regimes, you haven't seen that kind of play out of the Giants.
Good point.
My opinion. I don't know.
Yeah.
You were still talking about other stuff. I'm sorry, but
all right, that's okay. We saw a big win by Minnesota over Green Bay. Really big win.
Can't both have it.
I think two of us had that game, right?
I know it was my best bet, and in my betting league, it was my 10-point game. I love the Vikings in that game.
We saw really good victories from New Orleans, Philadelphia, Washington, from the Chargers. We saw another good win from Miami, which will bring up the question, are the Patriots dead now? Are they dead already after week one? I mean, we're probably getting close with them that another couple of losses and everybody's going to be talking about them not making playoffs already. They just look dead out there. And then the other game is Cleveland. Cleveland got off to a good start. You know, it's funny with that team. They seem to know how to play with the players they have. You see Chubb, you see Hunt, they play some good defense. It wouldn't have mattered who the quarterback is. Brissett got the win. So another good start by them. And then we got some questionable calls and some issues. So I'll start with one, and that is Cincinnati with the loss in overtime. I was under the assumption that they rebuilt that offensive line, and it still looks like Burrow has absolutely no time to do anything in the backfield.
That was a weird game.
It was a weird game.
Well, here's the thing, right? Okay, so besides the kicking, and I'll get to that in a second. Okay, so the Steelers jump out. The Bengals start bouncing back here, right? So the Bengals score a touchdown. It chases in, clearly in, right? They rule him short. The Bengals don't challenge it. They go and try to run a quick play. They don't get in. They miss on fourth down, and they turn the ball over on downs. Then they get the ball back. They move down the field. Chase makes an amazing one-handed grab in the corner, but he got his foot just out of bounds, his toe just out, right? Then they go to third down and fourth down. On fourth down, Chase finally catches the touchdown, right? Three tries, he finally gets it, right? They get in, and they miss the extra point, the little gimme. They miss it. So now you go to overtime, and they get another show-off, and they play for the field goal, knowing they have the backup long snapper, which – whatever. They have the backup long snapper, and he can't get the ball down. But they're playing for the field goal rather than aggressively trying to get close to the goal line. And they got relatively close. And although the snap was high, McPherson hooked it so far left, it was unbelievable. It was like it was a 50-yarder, not a 30-yarder. Kev?
Laces out. Got to get those laces out.
I know, but it was like my God. They did everything right. They could. And in between this, Boswell hits the post from 55. He clanked. It was the loudest clank I've ever heard in a game. Boom! So, I was like, whoa. So it was kicking woes, but you can't blame Boswell. That was 55, even though everybody thinks everything's a layup for a field goal. Burrow threw, what, four picks? I mean, he was not good. TJ Watt now probably out for an extended amount of time with a torn pec. So the Steelers got hurt, and Mitch Trubisky looked good, which means the Bengal defense isn't there. G?
We'll move from that field goal disaster to the Monday night game. Denver, I mean, do you guys want to – I mean, we know it happened. We saw it. You want to talk about the timeout usage or non-usage? Go ahead, Kev.
I was watching Manning Cast. I'm not watching Joe Buck and Troy Aikman on Monday nights if I can help it. I'd rather watch Manning Cast. And as soon as they picked up the, what did they get, about 9-10 yards on third down, made it fourth and five, made it a makeable fourth down. There's Peyton in the corner, showing timeout. And he's looking bewildered at the fact that Denver's not calling timeout. And I'm thinking to myself, what are they doing? Call timeout. You've got three. Get yourself in there. You sent two or three first-rounders and other players to bring in Russell Wilson, gave him $200-plus million. Let him go out there and get the 5 yards for the first down and keep that drive alive. You have plenty of time. You've got two timeouts. Put it in his hands. You got to settle for a 64-yard field goal. The only time you should kick a 64-yard field goal is the last play of the game.
And, it's, that and, to win. And it's not like they don't have some big offensive players that can make a play. Like you said, they got Russell Wilson. They got two receivers in Jeudy and Sutton. They got two running backs in Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon. You're going to tell me that after all of that, you want to just keep the timeouts in your pocket and kick a field goal? I mean, I was basically doing the same timeout signal that Manning was doing. Darren, what do you think?
You're also not in Denver, okay? You're not kicking in light freaking air where you can set records, where you can kick a 70-yarder. You're in freaking Seattle, okay? It's game one of the season. You've got Russell Wilson who can, like you said, Kev, he can run for it. You can do a lot of things with him. The best defensive player on Seattle going into that game is Jamal Adams. He's out. He's hurt. Seattle didn't play badly, but defensively. But Denver had 200 more yards than they did. It wasn't like Seattle played great defensively. Denver outgained them by 200 yards. And it wasn't like Seattle gained zero. Denver gained over 400 yards in the game. That means that you can get 5 yards when you need it. That's why Russell Wilson is there. He doesn't have to do anything fancy. It can just be a little rub play, a little pick play to the freaking tight end. You dump it. He gets 5. You call your timeout again, and you kick the field goal from 57. And you say, you know what? We gave you a shot. We got down the field. What they did was rookie coach, Nathaniel Hackett. His father never, he was an okay offensive coordinator, Paul Hackett. He did some things, but my God, I couldn't understand what they were doing. I was stunned, just stunned by it.
But before we move on to the Geno hot take from week one, any comments about the Indianapolis-Houston tie?
Well, Rodrigo Blankenship is no longer has a job. He was cut after the missed field goal. You know what the funny thing about that game was? Houston jumped out 20-3. Indy stormed back to get themselves right in there. They had opportunity to win it. They did not. It's one of those. It's an early season game. It's like one of those games where we saw it all week. Even we can all admit the Bills look really good, right?
Yeah, they look great.
Turned the ball over 4 times. Okay, they look really great. They had 4 turnovers. Okay, the fact that these teams don't hit in training camp, the fact that these teams don't play enough preseason games, means that week one always looks like crap. Kansas City actually came out and looked pretty good. And I thought the Chargers looked pretty good for the most part. Every other team I saw out there, bad teams were able to play against good teams because there was sloppiness. The Jet defense, except for a couple of big plays, actually were even, if not a little bit better than the Ravens were for a lot of that game. They gave up a couple of really big plays. They shouldn't have been, as close. But what you see is that these teams are just not ready for prime time when they come out in week one. And I think agree. We saw that with the Colts, and I think we saw that with the Colts and the Texans. Kev?
No, I agree. I agree completely with that comment. It does not look like you could see it. It doesn't look like these guys are just ready for the action of hitting one another as soon as they come out in week one now.
Agree. Texans coach punts 4th and 2 at midfield with 10 seconds left to settle for the tie.
I didn't like it. I don't think you ever played for a guy.
Any comments on the Baltimore and the Jets?
Defense looked good in the first half. Defense looked good in the first half. A couple of big plays. There was that pass interference on the 1 touchdown drive. You held Baltimore to what, 60 yards rushing, 70 yards rushing for the game? That's always impressive. We remember Baltimore had that, 100-yard streak every game for, about 4 years, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You never stopped.
Okay. And and here comes the Geno hot take.
I'll comment on that, too. One more second.
Go ahead.
Saw some signs from the Jets, okay? The fact of the matter is Michael Carter, besides dropping that touchdown, had a really good game. And the first guy never gets him, all right? Flacco was only sacked twice. It looked like he was under pressure a lot more than that. Wasn't sacked as often as you expect him to be.
But he was hit a lot.
He was hit. But he also did not help his offensive line. He would step up in the pocket and not release it. I could not understand what he was doing. You've been in the league freaking 18 years or whatever it is. When you step up, your tackle has no chance if you don't throw it. The defensive end can just slide over and hit you. I don't know what he was thinking, but I was impressed with Carter. Garrett Wilson showed some real moves on a couple of plays, which I like to see. And again, like we talked about, the defense played really, really well. They got tired. They gave up a couple of big plays, but for the most part, if you would have told me Lamar Jackson would have to beat us through the air to win the game, I would have taken my chances. He had to, and he did. He beat us in one-on-one coverage in a couple of spots, Kev.
And Sauce Gardner, they barely tested him.
And when they did, he knocked them down.
According to the Next Gen stats, 4 attempts went his way, 2 completions, 19 yards.
Yeah, not bad for rookie in his
first game.
He played very well. I was actually pleasantly surprised with the defense. The offense, obviously, Zuerlein misses a kick. They missed they drop a touchdown. A few things that you would have liked to see that could have made the game a little bit more competitive.
Can we get a damn kicker?
Well, you thought we all thought Zuerlein was a kicker, but it didn't work out. G, you were going to make another point. Sorry, bud.
Yep. So, and the last item on my list for NFL Week 1 is the Dak Prescott injury. Hot take, and here it comes. Mark it down. After 1 week, Dallas is not making the playoffs. We can write it right now. Put it down. They're not making the playoffs. This team had no room for error. Dak Prescott was one of their only hopes. He's their one shot with the quarterback position. Their backups are not good. And what we saw in week one was their wide receivers past CD Lamb are not good either. So I'm putting it down as the hot take. I will put it down in the books. Dallas not making the playoffs.
I picked them to win the division, so I'm not willing to give up on it yet. But we'll see what Cooper Rush, who did win a game last year when he played, we'll see what he brings.
Okay.
I got a couple of points.
Any other comments for NFL? Kev, any other comments for NFL before we move on to college football?
Real quick.
I'm going to do a couple of pro picks, pro selections as well. Go ahead, Kev.
Real quick. Bears, Niners. Lance struggles in his first game. How much of a leash does he get? You got Jimmy G there.
That was a horrible game. I mean, it was
a freaking monsoon.
I got to give the kid another game before we can even make an assumption.
I think he gets the month of September at least. I think he gets 4 games.
You mentioned the Panthers, Browns, Baker come from behind. Looked like he pulled out that game. Ticky-tack rough for the passer against Cleveland, the Panthers to set up that field goal drive.
Yep.
Can we put away the flag?
It depends on the crew. Some crews don't throw anything. Other crews throw everything. The Monday night game was horrible to watch. There was a flag like every 3 plays.
Oh, the Broncos. It felt like the Broncos were being called for every penalty.
Oh, it was
at least
crazy.
Early on. First quarter, it was flag Broncos.
Kev, they outgained them by 200 yards. Well, I mean, it wasn't like it was close. It wasn't like 100 yards. 200 yards, doubled them, almost doubled them.
2 fumbles in the end zone.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah, and Melvin Gordon getting more touches than Javonte Williams stuns me, but that's beside the point.
Yep. Darren, you had a couple more points?
A couple things. Just your thoughts on it, guys. Mahomes without Hill. Thoughts?
They were rolling that whole game. So
first game, you didn't miss him.
Yep, exactly. Hill without Mahomes.
He looked okay. I mean, we'll see if they're going to start utilizing him in more deeper patterns, but he looked fine.
I saw him bounce a couple passes to him, but Tua doesn't have the arm that Mahomes has. Kev?
Milton Berle game. They showed enough just to win.
Well, here's the beauty of it. Everybody's saying, oh, you know, they played really well. They scored 7. They scored 1 touchdown. The other touchdown was defensive, and it was on a 4th and 7 where Waddle beat him on a little bit of a skinny post. Miami's offense didn't do what I expected them to do in that game. Or maybe New England's defense is much better than we're giving it credit for. Saints-Falcons, the comeback. Probably the best comeback of the weekend, by the way. I mean, the Saints were down 16.
It's a good win, but it's a good win against a team that we don't really think is going to be that good. I'm willing to say that it was a slow start for New Orleans. I can't see that the Atlanta team's going to win more than 5-6 games. So I don't want to give New Orleans too much credit at this point, but then again, I did have them in the champ. I did predict them to be in the championship game. So I do think that they are going to play well. Kev?
I think one of us had the Falcons to cover.
I did.
So did I.
I lost the other game. Kev got all three. I only got two.
Shockingly, I got all three. That doesn't happen.
No, I like the fact. Well, it's a rivalry game. The two teams have played against each other for years. They hate each other, so it's always fun.
Yep.
The rookie that kicked the 58-yard field goal for Cleveland.
Impressive.
Unbelievably impressive. That was good from 70.
Yeah.
I mean, he hit the middle of the freaking net. That was at least 15 yards over. I was like, oh, my God, at least 12 anyway. Impressive. Yeah. I thought the Charger-Raider game was the best played game of the weekend, except Carr had a couple picks. I thought that was a good battle of the two teams. Jahan Dotson. I don't know. None of us were expecting him to be this special. He looked amazing against in winning that game against Jacksonville. I really liked him a lot.
Let's listen. I'm the Commanders fan. Let's just take it easy. I don't know how good Jacksonville's defense really is, and not only that, but they also made Curtis Samuel like a fantasy god this week. So let's just take it easy with the Dotson. I think he's going to be good. I think he's going to be really good, Dotson. But let's just.
Do you like Philly, G? Do you like Philly?
Yeah.
Think of them this week.
I know. They gave up 35
points to Detroit.
I like it a lot.
They gave up 35 points to Detroit.
And they won the game.
35 points. So I'm just saying, you're criticizing Washington because you don't know about how good Jacksonville's defense, but Jared Goff looked like God.
I'm not criticizing Washington. You made a comment about how good Dotson is. I like Dotson. I'm the Commanders fan. But let's just slow down the pace because they played against the Jacksonville defensive. Let's just take it easy with the Dotson. You know,
that's the way I feel about Jalen Hurts. I didn't think he was that great, but he ran the ball well. I still don't think that Philly's defense giving up 35 points to Detroit did not impress me.
If they're going to put up 38, they don't need to worry about the 35 they gave up.
Wentz and Goff, I think, didn't they go 1-2 a couple years ago? They lived up to their billing. Finally.
They did. I mean, you know, listen, I always liked Detroit since Barry Sanders, probably since Billy Sims. So I've always kind of like rooted for them on Thanksgiving type of thing. I wouldn't say I follow them that close. The Bills win with four turnovers, and they look dominant in it. I thought it was amazing. Vikings made a huge statement, and Geno played really, really well on Monday night. That was my last point.
You know, Smith played a really good game.
It really impressed me. So, any other points on the NFL, guys?
No, let's move to college.
Anything for this weekend stick out for you, real quick?
For this weekend, I mean, we'll do the picks at the end.
Yep.
Okay. We'll do the fantasy and the picks at the end. College football. Let's make it a movie theme to start. We Are Marshall knocks off Rudy. Unbelievable. I texted that to Kev the other day. But, I mean, but the thing was that no Notre Dame coach has ever lost his first three games until Marcus Freeman came. Now, the first one was a bowl game. They lost by two. Then you lose in Ohio State, you don't feel that bad. But losing at home to Marshall, who got paid $1.25 million to show up and left with a win. Kevin, you're the Irish fan. Thoughts?
Season's over. Turn out the lights.
College football, two games is usually a death sentence almost.
Tumble totally out of the polls. They've lost the quarterback, Tyler Buchner. He's out for the season now. It's going to be a long season for the Irish. You're looking at maybe one of those 3 or 4 win type of seasons.
Well, I think they beat Cal this week, but we'll get to that later. Alabama escapes Texas.
Play the game.
More than I did, Kev. Horrible rough in the passer call, by the way.
Yeah.
In the end, what the hell was that?
And then the biggest play on that field goal drive to win it for Alabama. Alabama had 1st and 10 from the 37. About 30 seconds left. Bryce Young drops back. Texas has him dead to rights. He somehow ducks under the defensive end and scrambles for 20 yards down to 17, sets it up for the field goal. Bama escapes. Not impressive at all, though.
Not 20-19, but they usually don't go out of conference against good teams at this stage of the season anyway.
First road non-conference games since Penn State in 2012.
It's been a while. One of the best upsets of the weekend to me, probably not talked about a lot, Washington State goes into Camp Randall and wins at Wisconsin. Not something that Wazoo usually does. Coach Dickert and a kid named Renard Bell, who's playing quarterback for this team, who played in front of more fans in that game than he had in his entire career before this as a JUCO quarterback, found a way to win at Camp Randall. It's the Pac-12 doesn't win these games very often. The Pac-12 usually loses these head-to-head matchups. That's how big this game is for them, for the conference.
You would think going into Camp Randall, Wisconsin would just, okay, maybe struggle a little bit early, get their feet under them, then figure it out, start wearing them down with the running game. And it didn't happen.
Shocking. Crazy, right? Just crazy. The Johnny Majors Bowl. Okay? Tennessee-Pittsburgh. Johnny Majors coached at both schools. Last year, Pittsburgh went into Tennessee and won. This year, Tennessee goes into Pittsburgh and won. Great game, by the way. Well played. Good offense. Good stuff. Tennessee. Josh Heupel, who you might remember as the Heisman Trophy candidate back in the day with Oklahoma, you know, doing a good job in Tennessee. They're a team to watch in the SEC, in my opinion.
That was a fun overtime game.
It was a well-played game. It really was. I enjoyed that game. App State, Appalachian State, goes into Kyle Field, home of the 12th man, and beats A&M. Not only, they only beat them by three. They dominated this game. This game wasn't as close as the score would indicate. App State was much the better team.
Texas A&M, 180 yards of offense.
They got problems.
You don't see that in college football.
Especially SEC schools. You know, they don't get dominated at home like that. It was stunning what I saw.
If you told A&M before the game you would hold App State to 17, they would have said, oh, easy win for us.
42-17. App State scored 61 the week before. How many in the fourth quarter, Kevin? It was like 41?
40. In the fourth quarter.
Yeah. And they held them to 17, and App State beat them up. I was stunned. K-State bombed Missouri. I know it's not a big game for anybody's thing, but Missouri, again, an SEC team getting blown out. I was stunned by it. Duke is 2-0. All of a sudden, it's a football school. They didn't beat anybody great, but I picked against them this week, and they made me shut up by beating Northwestern on the road. Two wins against Temple and Northwestern.
They beat another smart school.
Oh, my God. Crazy. Hawaii covered against Michigan, Kev. Gene, did you make the bet?
They covered the 50-point spread.
Did you make the bet, Gino?
I did not.
I can't believe it. BYU Baylor goes to OT. What a great – make your comments, and then I'll make mine. Go ahead, Kev.
I was going to say, tough for me. I had Baylor, and they go into overtime. Both missed field goals.
They both missed a field goal, and the BYU kid missed a field goal at the end of regulation. BYU missed two field goals. Baylor missed one, and then BYU was finally smart enough to score a touchdown. And Baylor committed two penalties in the last overtime drive, kept pushing themselves back. It was I think that Baylor missed. I'm sorry, BYU missed the extra point and they scored the touchdown, or did they go for two and miss? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, I don't remember now.
I don't remember, but either they went for two and missed or he missed the extra point, and they only had 26. So Baylor just needed a touchdown to win.
I don't think I've ever seen a team take 11 plays from the 25 and not score.
Crazy. What's up with Iowa? Okay.
They can't score.
Okay, so in 2 weeks, now we talk about everybody's offense and stuff like that. Iowa in two games has outscored their opponents 14-13. They're 1-1. They've scored 10 points offensively and two safeties. So right now their scoring is one field goal, one touchdown, two safeties. That's the offense. This is Iowa football. This is Hayden Fry football. Not Hayden Fry anymore, but you know what I mean. Yep. This team, I haven't seen a Big Ten team look this disastrous offensively in a long time. And now you're saying to yourself, okay, Wisconsin loses at home to Washington State. Iowa can't score. If you're in that – Nebraska had a fire frost, which we'll get to in a second. If you're a team in the West that doesn't normally win, you're Illinois, you're Minnesota, you say, my God, I have a path. I have a path to get into the Big Ten championship game because the two big dogs on this side aren't doing anything. And Northwestern lost at home to Duke. So you're saying, oh, my God, we can really slide in there and have a shot because all the good teams play in the East. Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, they're all in the same freaking league. And the dominant teams are usually, you know, Iowa and, I mean, Purdue is also a good squad. So they could be there. But now all three of these teams have a chance to play in the Big Ten championship game. Pretty exciting, I think.
Yeah. Opens it up on that west side of the Big Ten. Like you said, the East is just stacked.
It always is. So if this division – and you know, I remember starting watching football. You had the Southwest Conference, you know, and even college sports. I remember basketball, the Metro Conference with, like, Louisville and Memphis State and Virginia Tech with Del Curry and with Bimbo Coles. But, you know, I mean, so you used to have all that type of stuff. But now you look at it and it's – and they're talking about 20 teams in that league. So you're going to look at a team like Rutgers – who every year is never going to even get to play a soft team on the other side. They're going to have to play 8 or 9 really good teams on their own side. It's going to be nuts. I don't know. Kind of drives me crazy. Scott Frost, any thoughts?
Yes. He looked like he was going to be the right guy to come back to Nebraska.
He won at UCF.
Former quarterback there, was real good with UCF, and showed up, and they've lost countless games by one score. They just couldn't get over the hump. I don't know what it was. Let's see if the new coach can bring it back and rally them for this year.
I mean, yeah, that's what
they've been right there every game.
Mickey Joseph, this team has lost 18 straight games against ranked opponents. They play Oklahoma this week. Not an easy first game for them. You want to run down – well, just quickly, these are the big games of the week, just so everybody knows, and then we'll go. Gino, you want to make a point first?
So last week, we're going to get to college football picks. So last week, both Darren and Kevin went 1-for-3. Gino went 2-for-3 in college football. Darren, you want to start us off with picks? You can mention some big games going on.
Okay, my three picks of the week are this. I like the Irish to get off the snide and lay 10.5 against Cal. I think they're going to win this game at home. I like the Oregon Ducks to beat BYU. BYU's kicking game has me scared. I think Oregon can cover the 3.5-point spread. And Colorado has fallen off the face of the earth. They've been blown out twice now. I think Minnesota makes it 3. I think Minnesota lays 27.5. And beats Colorado. I was torn. I was looking at Utah over San Diego State, and I was looking at Michigan State over Washington, but I'm not going to touch those. I'll just go with the 3.
We're going to go head-to-head in one of my picks.
All right, G.
So I'm taking BYU plus the points.
Okay.
Number 12, BYU, I think they get it done. I know they're on the road. I still think they're going to get it done. My second pick is Oklahoma minus the 11.5 at Nebraska. You guys just mentioned this. And my third pick is going to be Wake Forest, minus 16.5 against Liberty. That's my picks. Kev, what do you think?
First, I'm not going to touch the game. I picked against them last week. I can't do it 2 weeks in a row. I got to give a shout out to my son's Gamecocks. He'll be at Williams-Brice Stadium Saturday cheering on the Cox against the Georgia Bulldogs, number one team in the country.
Awesome.
Other than that, the three games, we'll go head-to-head, Gino. I'm going to take Nebraska plus the 11.5 against Oklahoma.
I got it listed as 10.5.
It's a home game, new coach, rivalry game. I think Nebraska comes out and gives them a battle.
The pride of the Big Eight.
Second game, I'll take the USC Trojans at home, laying 12 to Fresno State. I think USC should win the game fairly easily. The third game, I'm going to take a road dog. Miami traveling to Texas A&M. A&M after a rather lackluster game on Saturday, as we mentioned, against App State. I think Miami goes in there with Tyler Van Dyke and covers the 5.5.
Okay.
And I'm calling the outright win.
There we are. Outright win. With authority, Kev.
Any other college football games worth mentioning this week, guys?
Auburn-Penn State is a great matchup. It really is. It's probably the best matchup of the weekend.
The rest of the top 10, you've got four games with spreads over 30 and three games with no line because they're playing an FCS team. So top 10 is not much.
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma and Nebraska is kind of interesting to watch. Michigan State, Washington is a good matchup for Washington to get the host of Big Ten team on the coming across the country. Mississippi State, road favorite at LSU. I don't know the last time that happened. And Texas Tech, NC State. I just think it's good scheduling. These are two teams that don't normally play each other. Nice to see two pretty good teams in the conferences go head-to-head. So we'll see what happens in that.
That should be a pretty close, interesting game.
Yeah, NC State should win at home, I would think, but it's going to be a close one.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to the NFL picks for week two. Week one, Darren went 2-for-3. Kevin went 3-for-3. Gino went 0-for-3. Kev, you are getting ready to lead off here. So,
oh, boy. After the big 3-0 last week, expect the 0-3 this week. First game, we're going to take the Steelers as home dogs. They're getting 2 points against New England. New England just looks awful, and I think the Steelers at home should beat the Patriots, never mind getting the 2 points.
Spread is 1.5.
1.5 now still. I'm taking the Steelers.
Okay.
Second game, we had touched about this team losing their quarterback. Not having many other offensive weapons. Yes, Cooper Rush won a game last week, but I think Cincinnati comes out. They come out ticked off about their performance on Sunday. I think they get it in gear this week. I lay the 7.5 on the road against the Cowboys. And the third game, I was tossing up between two of them. I decided to go the Raiders at home, laying 5.5 against the Cardinals. Cardinals looked flat on Sunday against the Chiefs. They just seem to be missing, well, besides missing DeAndre Hopkins, there's just something missing in that team. Raiders played a good game against the Chargers. Again, that division, I think every matchup is going to be tough, and I think the Raiders are a better team than the Cardinals. I have them at home covering the 5.5.
Okay, it's probably not going to change your point, but the spread is at 6.5 right now.
Take the Raiders still.
I kind of figured that would be the case.
I was getting them off ESPN earlier today.
Okay.
Just so you know where I got it from.
I will make my picks next because in a very sad state of affairs, I also have Pittsburgh -1.5, and I also have Cincinnati -7.5. A lot for the same reasons that you just said, Kev. I agree with you. I think Pittsburgh is good. I think they should have no problem taking care of the Patriots. And I agree with you. I think Dallas is going to come out flat. Cincinnati, I think, I agree with you, is pretty pissed off about the way they played last week. I look forward to them probably putting up a 10 to 14 point victory. My third game is going to be the Cleveland Browns. I am taking the Browns -6.5 against your Jets. I don't think the Jets are bad. I really don't think they're that bad, but I have a feeling that the Browns come out and they're just going to steamroll the team. I could see them going to Chubb. I could see them going to Hunt. I could see them getting Brissett going a little bit. So those are my three picks. Darren, you are up next.
Well, one thing, and I didn't pick this game. I do think the Patriots are going to beat the Steelers. I just think they're going to win the game outright.
Ooh.
Do. I just don't think – I'm not sold. Mitch Trubisky is going to have a much harder time against this Patriot defense than he did against the Bengal defense. I'm on the same page with Kev. I like the Raiders. I think the Raiders win. Besides DeAndre Hopkins, Kyler Murray, to be honest with you, just isn't that good. And those two defensive ends, when you put Chandler Jones, who's going to have a little bit of revenge against his old team, and you have Max Crosby, who's almost unblockable, I think they're going to make his life a living hell. I like the Raiders to win by two touchdowns. I like the Dolphins getting 3.5 against the Ravens. Ravens didn't impress me that much last week, as much as they won the game relatively easily. Watching didn't blow me away. And the Dolphin defense, probably a step up from the Jet defense. I think that the Dolphins will keep this game close. They might lose, but I have it at 3.5. The Dolphins getting 3.5 in that one. And my third one is I think the Colts get angry and bounce back and they blow out Jacksonville. I, I, I don't dislike Jacksonville. I think they played hard last week. I just think that the Colts will take a lead, and they're just going to keep giving the ball to the running game and just letting it fly out. And I think that the Colts minus four is what I had last. I think the Colts win it by about 10 to 14.
Three and a half is the official line.
Okay.
Going to go against the recent trend of the Colts not winning in Jacksonville since 2014?
I'm fully aware of the trend. I just think the Colts are better. And especially because they tied last week. I mean, listen, you go through a stretch where you play Houston and you play Jacksonville. If you get out of there 0-1-1, wow, that would be a blow. I mean, the whole division looks bad because the Titans don't look that good either. The other game I kind of like, I think the Chargers are going to cover against the Chiefs on Thursday night, but not counting that as one of my games. I just think that series is always really close. I don't like picking against the Chiefs because I kind of like the Chiefs, but that's just one of those things.
Thursday night, Amazon Prime only?
Yep, you got it. Everything's streaming now, baby.
The other game I'm going to mention to you is I kind of really like the Rams minus the 10.5 against the Falcons. I think they're going to come out and they're going to be just as pissed off as everybody else the way they played against opening night against the Bills. I could see that being 17-20 with no problem. So those are the picks for this week. Darren, you got any quick fantasy stuff?
Just a couple things to look at real quick as you're going through this week. When I see what's going on, you know, it's the second week of the season. You're going to play your superstars. You know, you're not benching somebody for like a random backup. But if you had Dak Prescott or somebody like that and your quarterback is just mediocre, you know, quarterback's under the radar. Wentz gets to play against the Detroit defense this week, you know. Hurts look good. Wentz will look good. Goff gets to go out and again, you know, play against a suspect defense, in Washington. Same thing. They get to play each other, so that's interesting. And I think Mariota is someone you look at only because they're probably going to be behind by so much that they're going to have to throw. G?
I'm on that same vein while we're talking about quarterbacks. I think Aaron Rodgers comes out and has a really good game against Chicago this week. The other one, and I could see this really happening, I think Trey Lance is going to have a really good game against Seattle. I know Seattle came out and played really well against Denver. I could see that happening. Just looking down the board, is there any interesting fantasy plays for you? Outside the top 10, I'm not going to go to, you know, everybody's going to tell you Mahomes is going to have a good game. We're trying to stay away from the top 10 guys. I got a couple.
Go ahead.
I could see both Las Vegas Raider receivers having good games. Adams and Renfro against Arizona. I kind of like Claypool to have a good game against New England. On the running side, I think this is the game for Javonte Williams. You saw him catching some passes last week. I think this week he does it on the ground against Houston. The other one that I would be on the lookout for is Travis Etienne against Indianapolis. He had a really good game, Etienne. He really did. He dropped the pass. Trevor Lawrence had him open in the corner of the end zone on the other pass that he just overthrew him on. If both of those go through, it totally changes how we're looking at Etienne going into week two. And the one tight end I'll give you is I like Hayden Hurst this week against Dallas. Any other fantasy plays?
And just a couple guys under the radar for me, running back, Davis Price in San Francisco with the injury that went to Eli Mitchell. He'll get some carries. He's someone, even if you don't use him this week, someone to pick up because he could become a player. Mostert, I think if Michael Carter had a pretty good game against Baltimore, I think Mostert could do the same thing for Miami. And I think Kamara's banged up. I think Mark Ingram's a play. I think he's someone you might want to have on your roster. Probably not drafted by a lot of teams and a lot of leagues, but you could certainly do something. On the wide receiver side, I think Christian Watson for Green Bay dropped a touchdown, an easy play. You know, I think Rodgers is going to, if he doesn't start catching the ball, he's going to beat the crap out of him. But I think he's someone that you could really look at. Robbie Anderson, had, you know, good game last week against Cleveland, coming back to play against the Giants in the stadium he knows. Interesting to see how he plays there. And then both of the Jet receivers, either Davis or Garrett, could be a guy that you look at just because, you know, they're probably going to be behind and having to throw again. So it's going to be interesting to see. And a tight end I'd look at, I like Hurst also. And I also like Logan Thomas for Washington. Think he can, well, for the three games a year, he's healthy. He's pretty good. Kev, any fantasy points? None for Kev. Not a fantasy guy.
I'm living through my son. He's in a 12-team league. Had the second most points this week.
Nice.
And lost.
So did Gino. He had the second most points behind me, who had the first most points. Thank you. So, again, we're the Sports Kings from Queens, okay? You can catch us. You can Gmail us. You can send us an email at any point. SportsKingsFromQueens@gmail.com. Check us out on iTunes, Spotify. Tune in anywhere you can get a podcast. Check us out on Instagram, Sports Kings from Queens. Check us out on Facebook, Sports Kings from Queens. Check out what we have. Tell us that you hate us. Tell us that you love us. Tell us anything you want to tell us. But tell us. It's really, we hope you enjoy the show. I know we enjoy doing it. I'm Darren.
I'm Gino.
And I'm Kevin.
And may the sports be with you.
Ciao.
Good night, everybody.
This has been the Sports Kings from Queens.